Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the penultimate webinar of season two. I can't believe how quick it's gone. Mad. Anyway, I really enjoyed getting the podcast recommendations from you all last week. So let's try something different. Let's get you all to recommend your favorite book, your favorite business book, your favorite marketing book, or just your favorite book of all time in the little chat feature down the bottom. Let people know where you're watching from. And of course, don't forget to switch your chat feature as well to all panelists and attendees so everyone can see your recommendations as well. So today, our guest is Hannah Thorpe. Hannah is the Director of Growth Strategy at Found, which is a growth marketing agency down in London who count Boohoo, Gourmet Burger Kitchen, Fender, and many more amongst their clients. This is actually the third time that we've had the pleasure of Hannah speaking at the marketing meetup, having already spoken in Norwich and London. And I'm sure that had the world continued as it was pre-March, then we would have had her speak an awful lot more in our live locations too. Although she is a seasoned speaker, having already delighted audiences in the likes of Brighton SEO and many other places too. There was a couple of things that I really admired when I saw Hannah speak. The first was when you hear her, it's like there's a moment where you're just watching her go and you're like, oh, you're an expert in something that I know something barely about at the moment, which is amazing. But then the second thing is that, like, with that admiration, she then has a willingness to share it and elevate other people to her level, which is, you know, which is the best thing, because it means we all get to learn and we all get to get better as a result of her experience and her expertise, which, you know, is something that I really admire and is exactly the type of thing that we really love with the marketing meetup speakers, that they actually take the time to elevate other people too. Today's session is relevant because landing pages is something which we all probably engage in at some point. That can be the gateway to our website, and it's not necessarily something many of us necessarily take time to consider, take time to improve, or, you know, about. It's quite intuitive. So hopefully by the end of this session, you come away with a feeling that you've got 1% better, you've gained one bit of knowledge, you've hopefully met a few people in the chat, and hopefully you come away like, this has been an hour invested in me, and I'm now slightly better at something than I would have been had I not spent the time. Today's session will run as a Q&A, as a presentation with a Q&A element. And Hannah's also taken the time to take a look at some of the sites that you guys have submitted. So I think there's four examples that she's integrated into the talk. So hopefully you get an awful lot from those live examples as well. I'm just reiterating that in the chat box, if you make sure to switch it to all panelists and attendees, then everyone can see your messages. That is really important. And in the Q&A, the thing that I've noticed over the course of these webinars is that the questions that got answered or the most thumbs up are those questions which get asked earlier on. So if you have questions that come up throughout the course of the session, or if you've got some already, make sure to answer them in the ask them in the Q&A section, and then people will be able to give them the thumbs up, and we'll try and get them answered as soon as possible. Finally, I want to thank two bunches of people. So the first is everyone for being here. So I can see that the participant number is ticking up to 204 right now, and that will continue to go up throughout the course of the session. But then also I want to make a big thank you to the sponsors. Throughout the course of the year, I've sort of spoken about them at length. I've sort of really tried to encourage you to get involved with them, and this week's no different, because if it wasn't for those guys, then we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing, and it would be a shame not to be able to do that. So you've had the sponsors and what they do in the email before. I'll be sending a follow-up email immediately after this session as well. All I ask is that you take the time to say thank you to the human beings behind them. Do check them out. And if you like them, use them. You know, that's ultimately as much as they want to support the marketing meetup community, of course they want to see a business result out of it. And whether that's a thank you or you using them, then that's a lovely, lovely thing. Primarily, they all come in to support the community because they think it's the right thing to do. So I just want to say a big thank you to Content Cow, Fiverr, Pitch, Redgate, Cambridge Martin College, Lido, Brand, Third Light, Further, and Human, and Bravo. And my one ask is simply just to thank them. It's the polite thing to do. It's a nice thing to do, and it makes their day as much as hopefully this webinar will make yours or contribute to making your day a good day. So with all that said, we have the amazing Hannah, and it's over to you.
Thanks so much, Joe. Right, we're just going to see if we can get all of this technical stuff to work. I did it really smoothly in the run through with Joe, which shows that I'm now going to mess it up.
Well, we've got your slides, so we can see that much so far. So we're doing all right.
How's that looking?
All good to me.
Great. Can I just say, I am the biggest fan of reading and business books. So I've literally just written a page of notes from the chat alone. Like, I love this. I'm not going to do any work for the next month now. I'm just going to spend my time probably reading one of those books because there's a lot that I hadn't heard of. I thought I'd start and maybe chip in with mine. So there's a book that is called The Art of Thinking Clearly. And it basically talks you through how to kind of get that mental clarity when maybe you're struggling a little bit, how to reset your brain, that sort of thing. And I think it's actually a book that I read quite often when thinking about like landing pages and thinking about kind of looking at something that I've already looked at day in, day out. So I think that's probably also our biggest weakness when it comes to creating landing pages, because we're the ones that have built them. We're the ones generally that have written them, or we're looking at them every single day. And you become almost blind to some of the really obvious points and you're thinking it makes perfect sense. But then a user comes on your website and they have no understanding of what you do. So hopefully today we're going to talk through a few ways to improve those landing pages and to make sure that you're still getting the right traffic, but also that you're using that traffic in the right way to drive your business forward. So that was a super long introduction. Joe knows I'm terrible with timings, but it's early, so hopefully we'll still all make it to work on time. So hi, my name is Hannah Thorpe. I'm from an agency called Found, as Joe mentioned. I just, rather than tell you all about my background and all of that, thought I'd just make sure you've got my contact details. So if you have questions, follow-ups, you missed a tool I mentioned, anything like that, then feel free to reach out on Twitter or drop me an email or come and take a look at everything that Found do at found.co.uk. Cool. So today we're going to get straight into it and talk about what makes a really good landing page, what we're trying to achieve with that and what the criteria really are. Then I'm going to take you through a kind of clear five-step process as to what I look at when I'm reviewing the quality of a landing page and reviewing what should be on that page instead. And then we're just going to get stuck in and go through a few of those examples of sites that you guys have submitted, and talk about how they all have some slightly different things and different areas of opportunities. And then hopefully we'll also have time to go through any extra questions, things that pop up as we're talking through that you have as well. So make sure you drop those in the chat as we go. Cool. So I wanted to start and just go back to basics. So at Found, we're really lucky and we have a few employees who have never done anything in digital before. They barely know what SEO is. Obviously not in our SEO team, but what they do is they work in some of our ops teams and we kind of use them as like a sounding board when we start talking about things we're going to go and present about. And when I started talking about landing pages, the question I got is, what's the difference between that as a landing page and the difference between that as like just a web page? And I think the two have almost become synonymous, but it's important to note that a landing page has two really important criteria. And the first is that it needs to have a great user experience to encourage people to take action. So we want users to land there, feel warm, feel happy, and go, yeah, I'm going to do exactly what I wanted to achieve on this page. But we also need a landing page to be super visible to both new and existing customers. Now, I put super visible because for me, that generally means able to rank organically and visible in the terms of search. But it could be that you decide you want it to be visible through paid, and do things like really help boost your quality score if you're bidding on certain keywords, or be really visible on social when you keep sharing it. It doesn't really matter how you're generating that traffic, but what you need to know is that this is like the introduction, and it's the first time that a user is going to be seeing, visiting your site in that instance. So for a user, a good landing page has to do a lot of things. It needs to solve their problem, but without them feeling sold to. Like, it's always awful when at an event, a speaker gets up and their first 30 minutes are about that product you can buy from them, when really you're just there to learn. So you need to think of landing pages in the same way. It also needs to be more compelling and more memorable than other content. Answer the question really clearly, but also really specifically to what that one individual user wanted. And then they have to be able to find it whenever they need it. They need to make sure that the language matches so they know they're getting the right answer. It needs to be uniquely useful compared to everything else and indisputably accurate. You don't want them having to go back and search again. But that's really, really difficult. Like, that's a lot to cover off in just one page, especially when you're trying to target thousands and thousands of users. It just sounds a bit difficult. So now think about the fact that you also want search engines to like it, not just users. And for search engines to like it, you can't just add your SEO magic. It's not as simple as like, oh, I can just throw my smoke and mirrors at this page and it's going to rank perfectly. Because SEO is more than just adding a single keyword. It's more than just getting some links in. It's more than adding thousands and thousands of words onto that page and hoping for the best. And a good SEO landing page has to cover all of these criteria alongside the criteria of what a user's looking for. And that means that the landing page is broader than just itself. So it matters about the overall site health and how that site is crawled and indexed. But it also matters how relevant it is to the query, the volume of content, how much you're using structured markup, the links, the user engagement, the speed. All of these SEO factors are what are going to help you get that initial traffic to have that good experience. So how do we really put our best foot forward? In short, and I'm pretty sure this is a Google quote, I've just butchered slightly. But in short, you need to present the best resources for that user with that problem from all the pages in the index and at that specific moment in time that they need it. Like, this is a big thing to do, and you're not just doing it once. You need to do that multiple times for every single time you have a new user, and you need to do it to stay ahead of the competition as well, who are continually changing all of their pages. So I think that's a lot. And I think it's really important that we have a really clear landing page process for how to build out those pages, because that's going to help you to qualify as to what is good, what is maybe less good, and what else you can be doing on a landing page to really grow. So I wanted to start, ironically, because I've just started with why we're here, by telling you about this theory called the golden circle and how it's absolute nonsense when it comes to landing pages at this moment in time. So if you work in marketing, you're taught this whole thing about you start with why in the middle, build out to how, then build out to what, which is great. And in theory, that's right. But that's only right if you're kind of like nurturing an already present prospect. So if it's someone that's visited the site before, they want to go on that journey with you. They really want to commit to your brand and understand what's going on. But if you're trying to kind of present an omnipotent AI, which is what Google is, you need to really think about actually, how do you show that you are the best answer to that robot? And how do you show Google how relevant you are and how related your content is without compromising on that user experience? So it becomes a bit of a balancing act. So there's five kind of core steps that I follow every time I go and start looking at a landing page and start planning out what I'm going to do with it. And this is just for one specific kind of page, but I can see in the chat that there's quite a few of you talking about, like, if you're launching a new website or changing your whole architecture. And this process kind of like can build out and be part of that as well, in terms of understanding your whole site, what you want, and then how you build out that structure. So we can try and cover both as we go. So step one, it's knowing what you want. What do you want users to do when they're visiting your site? So there's roughly four core areas that I see from a landing page that generally we want people to happen. So the first is, like, if you're trying to attract a completely new user. And if you're doing that, you kind of want to prioritize meeting SEO best practice. So if you have no brand awareness and maybe your products and your services aren't that well known for what they are, you want to really make sure that you're visible on all of those generics. And that might mean that you need to compromise some of the kind of more, I don't know, maybe more like pretty UX stuff. So later on, we've got an example about cybersecurity, which is actually a space one of our clients works within. And for them, if they don't have a map like 1,500 to 2,000 words on that landing page, it just doesn't have a chance of ranking, which isn't the best user experience. So they have to trade that off as to what they want users to see versus how much they want that ranking. And then if you're looking to just convert users who already know you, you want to use really clear CTAs and not allow too much browsing. So one of the questions that's coming up is about, like, if you're incorporating links around your site and how you do that. So if you really are focused on conversion, what you want to do is not have too many CTAs, which are those calls to action across the site. You want to have calls to action, but on that page, not a link that says, go over here and view this product page and then go over here and read this about us, because you want to just keep the user super, super focused. But then also sometimes if you have a longer purchase consideration, you just want people to come on that page and then remember your brand. And in that instance, you want your brand to be super front of mind. And like the example I normally use for this is Joe's site with the marketing meetup, because it's super, super pink, but I never forget it. So you don't forget the name of that brand and you always have it front of mind, because the site made that such a big impression from a brand perspective, even though there's some like SEO opportunities and some user experience opportunities there on that site. And then you can also look at how, like, if users want to just find out more information, and if a user is browsing through for more information, you want your page to focus on the experience in general, but also that journey of what's their next question. If you can anticipate what they're going to want to know next, you'll be able to understand kind of what links to put where on the page and how to direct that journey. So you need to kind of nail down which of these four or another it is that you want to achieve with that site. And I know that that's hard, because the odds are you're going to want to achieve multiple things on one page, but pick what the highest priority is. Is this a traffic driver or is this a converter? Is effectively the simplest decision you need to make. And know that if you're driving pages to what we call like a traffic driver, and you want to get lots of traffic into that, that you can tie that up with your paid activity in terms of your retargeting. So with that cybersecurity client where their main landing page has all the words ever, we know it's really difficult for a user to kind of get through that and understand it. So we also make sure that we then retarget people that have seen that page. The landing page they see in search is a much more simplified version with just a few kind of like step-by-step bullet point lists, even though that wouldn't really work for SEO. And having those two versions helps people that have seen it once, they can come in, see the streamlined version and scroll down to see all the rest of the wealth of content they've seen before. Tricks like that are going to help you get the best of both worlds as you go through. So we kind of know what you want, and now it's time to think about what your users want. And it means you kind of really need to accept that it doesn't matter what you personally want to achieve. As far as Google's concerned, Google is there for users. It's there to make sure that it solves the problem of the user as quickly and as simply as possible. It's not there to generate you traffic, guarantee you visits, or guarantee you revenue. So whilst what really matters to you is something that you need to keep in the back of your mind, you also just need to understand what it is that that user is going to want to achieve when they're on your site. So that means focusing on how you're going to solve the problem at different stages of the journey and how you're going to help users get to that point. So the first step is thinking about what kind of phrases they're using when they come into the website. So that's going to be quite different to like, what does my boss want to rank for? Instead, it's going to be much more about what have they physically typed in? What maybe are they not finding answers to elsewhere? So I'd typically use a tool like Answer the Public for this because it gives you the really nice long tail questions here. And it's also completely free. So if I was to be producing a landing page that was specifically about marketing, you can see those sections that I can pull out about like how marketing has changed, how marketing works. These are all common searches that people have. And typically will help you understand the sorts of wording and phrases that they're using. What's also important to note when you're doing this with Answer the Public is to look at the kind of complexity of the other words that they're putting into their queries. So you can see here that actually when people search for marketing, they rarely use much other jargon within their queries. So marketing tends to be a lower level in terms of like skill level search. It's not the search that people will look for if they're like a particular niche SEO specialist or something like that. Marketing tends to be a generalist query. So you need to make sure your landing page on that is matching that generalist kind of terminology. So once you know what kind of phrases they're using, it helps you adapt that to what phrases you should be using. Now, in the spirit of only using free tools, I just want to talk about how useful Google is for this. So Google is something obviously we all have access to, but it's also a wealth of information when we're doing our research. And that's because when you know what people are searching, you can then pop that back into Google and actually see the types of results that are coming up and what kinds of phrases Google thinks are related, which appear obviously on the side and at the bottom. And also the kind of people also ask questions is what people Google believes the next typical search is. You can do it manually, obviously, or you can use tools like SEMrush or Systrix to pull what those like search results look like in themselves. Those tools cost quite a lot of money. SEMrush actually doesn't, so you could use that one for a bit. But if you don't want to use a tool like that, you can also just try and manually pull some of the data. So I always use a Chrome extension that is called DataMiner. So in Google Chrome, you download DataMiner for free. If you type in any search into Google, and then you can press on your DataMiner extension. And what it will do is it will help you to scrape what's on that page of results. So it will pull things like those people also ask questions, and it will pull it into an Excel spreadsheet for you, including the question and the answer. Now, if you start doing lots of searches and using that, you can start pulling lots of information into the spreadsheet. And it just gives you a bigger database to kind of work through and play around with. Which can be a little bit kind of more mathematical than maybe just taking a look at the SERP. So when you're doing that, what you want to do is look to understand whether the phrases that you're looking at and searching for are informational, transactional, or navigational as the kind of top level. The easiest way I think to do this is actually to just see the types of pages that are ranking. Are they informational, transactional, or navigational? Like, if it's transactional, you can almost guarantee that Google will have thrown Google Shopping at the top of the search results. Whereas if it's purely informational, Google traditionally actually won't let transactional sites rank. In particular, if you're looking at a sector related to like health or medical. So I work for a skincare company, and they previously were one of the biggest blogs in the skincare space in the US. They thought they were absolutely smashing it. Then they started selling products. They have a technically okay website. Based on its authority, it should be ranking. But interestingly, it's not. And it's not since they started trying to sell product, because every other keyword that they target, the websites that are there don't also sell product. So they're going to have to split it into two different brands if that's what they want to do as a business. Because ultimately, what you don't want to be doing is trying to sell people who are only looking for information, the same as you don't want to provide narrative to people who are there who want to buy. If you want to take this a step further than just information, navigation, and transactions, start thinking about whether the phrase someone searches is comparative, evaluative, or directive, which I get this is going to sound the same, and I don't know why I didn't put it on a slide, but if someone searches best laptops 2020, they're looking for options because they've used the plural of laptop. So best laptops means show me five and help me to look at the differences between all of them and show me specs. But if they search best laptop 2020 singular, they're looking for a single truth. That's an evaluative search. So they really just want someone to throw back to them, here's the laptop you need, click to order now. Whereas if they're doing a search that's a bit more directive, they might search their make and the model number of the laptop. This is going to show I know nothing about laptops, but like I use a MacTop Retina or something or other. And so if I searched for that specifically, what I would want to find a page only about that. I don't want to compare. I don't want to know if it's the best. And it's important to then decide whether you're the right business to rank in those places. So if you only sell one particular product, are you really the right one to be listing off for a comparative search if you sell one brand? Potentially not. If you are focused around kind of like maybe 10 different product ranges and comparing things, then potentially you could provide that list and help them be evaluative and comparative. You could provide a tool that helps them find the best laptop for them. Like there's lots of ways to do it, but it's also important to just identify when maybe you're not the right website. And you shouldn't have a landing page for that. So, sorry. So when you're looking at what users want, as I said, like look in the SERP. So I wanted to show you kind of three really interesting SERPs here and how I would then evaluate what my page should do. So if I search just for the marketing meetup as a whole, and Joe hasn't seen this, so I'm really sorry you're the example all throughout. So if I search just for the marketing meetup as a brand name, what you actually see is this rich snippet here called events, the one with the nice red COVID-19 alert. But that shows that Google understands that the marketing meetup is actually a type of event. It shows that Joe has smashed doing all of his branding and his entity recognition because Google has already determined that that's what that query should be about. So if you were trying to rank lots more content and you wanted to take over Joe's brand SERP, the best thing you could do is have lots and lots of events and list them all with structured data about being in particular, like scheduling, tickets, location, and provide all that information, because then you could appear in that box. There's no reason that Joe doesn't appear in that box right now, aside from COVID, just so you know. But it shows an interesting way as to how you could kind of take over on this. In terms of finding information, so this search digital marketing, you can see these people that are advertising, and I'm really sorry if it's anyone here, but you are wasting your money, because someone that searches digital marketing, like they don't want to go to the Salesforce Marketing Cloud website and learn about digital journeys, because those are transactional pages. So it shows these ads are a bit rubbish, because Google's intent here is to show people what digital marketing is. They pop up with a knowledge graph on the side saying internet marketing, learn all about it. They then have a knowledge graph box from Wikipedia defining it. And then immediately people also ask. If a query is like part informational and part people want to go to websites, it will normally have at least some organic results before that people also ask. So it's really interesting here that it's actually if you were writing a page for this, you'd just want to structure it in a Q&A format where you would have a heading of what are the types of digital marketing, bullet point list, what is a digital marketing job, bullet point list, and so on. You'd do better with that sort of content than long narrative prose or trying to sell a service. Whereas if someone searches and they put the word buy in, Google goes, oh my God, they are going to purchase. And it puts Google Shopping at the front of mind because then it gets to take some money off of people. And it lists those products because they're images, they get high click-through rate. And then everything underneath is related to buying. So you see that Amazon ranks really highly on that, even though it doesn't rank highly on the term digital marketing. Technically, if the queries, oh no, can you hear me now?
I've still got audio, so yeah, it looks like everyone.
Okay, great.
Yeah,
I'll just gesture more and you'll just guess what I'm saying. Okay, great. So yeah, that's basically how you understand intent. What I would say is it's not always that obvious. So I wanted to show you this query regarding like penetration testing, which is that type of cybersecurity. So this is the page that ranks first. And you can see actually, interestingly, if I search for that, even though it's a service term that would make my client money, it's a introduction page and then what is pen testing. And then I look at who ranks second and it's the same thing. They've got the same heading as that first title and then they go into like step-by-step stages. Now, if we jump back, you can actually see, oh, you can't because I cut it off. But you, when you see what they're doing on the side, they also have a link down to other pen testing savers, stages and processes. And then when we look at the third ranking, you can see that they've done exactly the same. They've opened with the title, what is this? And then once they've done that, they've then gone into process methods, stages. Super, super interesting, because maybe for that query, you actually don't want to answer, here's an informational page about penetration testing, or here's how you can buy penetration testing. Instead, you want to tell them what it is because that's people searching. And those pages had three things in common. They all had the same first heading. They all were using really, really simple language, even though typically in that space, the users who'd be buying are super qualified and smart at what they're doing. And also, they all had masses of words on the page. So maybe that term isn't the right term to rank for if you're trying to actually like, if you're just trying to rank for that term to sell, that's not the right words. The actual word, if you are in the cybersecurity space, is penetration testing services. When you add that services word on the end of your search, the intent instantly becomes to buy, and all of the pages switch around as to who ranks, and it is all about how you transact and how you inquire straight away. So you effectively need to find this crossover between your pages that are great and your audience problems and sit somewhere in the middle of there. And that means picking the right phrases, targeting the right audience, giving the best resource, and then solving those user problems ultimately. So when you're doing this, you need to then move to step three, which is focus on structure. So for this bit, I focused on your structure of your actual page, but it's also important to look at the structure of your website as a whole, just in terms of like, how you're going to have the page kind of laid out, and then how it's going to link to the rest of your content and flow through your site architecture. I'll give Joe a couple of links on that though, because we've done a few good decks about it, talking about it and how you build it, that he can share to you later. So I've stolen this from Moz because, to be honest, this isn't super exciting. In terms of like on page, there's a few basics that you just need to tick off. The first being, make sure you've nailed your page title. Your page title isn't the bit that appears on your page. It's the bit that appears in the search results. So you need to put that in. If your site's on WordPress, you'd probably put it in on something like Yoast. If your site is in something else, it should be in a little CMS box. So your title, your meta description, your URL, are all important in terms of the structure and how they're set up. In terms of your headings on page, you ideally want one H1, you want that at the top of the page. You want it to include your keywords, be descriptive of what that content's about. There's some rumors that you can have multiple H1s on a page, but logically that's just silly. So if your H1 is there and it's focused on, this is what my entire page is about, why would your entire page be about two separate statements? Like, that just doesn't make logical sense. That's just a Google being crazy thing. The only time it does make sense is if you work for The Telegraph or The Guardian or other newspapers are available, in which case they might have three feature stories and all three feature stories on the homepage could be a H1. Fine, that makes sense. If you're making donuts from Mary's Bakery, you need one. That's exactly right, Doug Smith. Sorry, I've got like chat going mental in the corner. Okay, so H2s, which are your lower in terms of headings, they're how you break up your sections. If you're doing Q&A content, you need to mark these up as H2s because it will help Google grasp onto them, understand that that's a section and understand that directly underneath it, you're answering the question, and then really clearly format your content. Hopefully this is super simple, but you can visit Moz's site there and see all of their texts about it. This stuff doesn't change. It's like SEO fundamentals. But then more than that, it's about also then thinking about the structure of the content in the SERP. So all these answer boxes appear, which means they like tables, they like bullet points, they like lists, they like step-by-steps. So if your content on the searches that you're focused on is appearing like that in the SERP, structure your landing pages in the exact same way. And then apply some structured data. So structured data is a topic all by itself. But in effect, there is structured data available for all different types of sites, but also for niche sectors. So you can see here for the marketing meetup that Joe has got a page that's eligible for rich results. And that's because he's used some really good structured data to mark up things like his important site links, which just says to Google, like, here, this page is important. This is one of the main navigation links. You should go there too. And it's why his result is much bigger in the SERP than just a single line. If you're in different sectors, then it's really important to kind of basically just go and Google what schema to use. So if you're doing like recruitment, you should have job posting schema. If you're doing a restaurant, you can actually have menu schema, which would have been really helpful for everyone during COVID. If you are doing, if you're doing events, you have event schema, you have product schema, all of these different types. There's even some special B2B ones. So there is actually a landlord insurance one, a financial services product one, like hundreds that you can put on your site that basically says, if you're a robot, what I want you to be able to do is understand what my page is about. There is schema for education courses, in particular for short courses, actually. If you go to schema.org and type education, it will give you the list. And the same in terms of property, if you're listing properties, starting from prices, et cetera, et cetera. So once you've done all of that, you've nailed your structure, you know what's going to go on page. You then need to think about what's next. And by what next, I mean, what do you want your user to do? You've written this great page of content. You don't just want them to get lost amongst it all. So the first thing to do is to start testing. And that means finding like frustrated clickers, highlighters, people that can't do anything on your site. So a tool like Hotjar is going to help you to do that. This shows where people have clicked, but it also shows where people have got angry and swirled their mouse around in the corner. It also shows when they've clicked on a button that isn't a button. And haven't got the experience they wanted. So set this up on your site straight away and use it to inform what your new landing pages should be. And give clear instructions on the actions you want people to take. So this is actually someone's site that they submitted for review. And I just pulled this out because I really, really like this bit about what should I do now. So what should I do now? Well, book an appointment and here's the information. So you can just click directly to book and take that action. And then it gives you all the detail as to what you get for that and why you do it. it's really simple to know what I should do as a user if I'm a bit confused next and what my next step would be. So also just give them the experience they're expecting. We absolutely love familiarity. So if you've seen Google Discover in your phone when you scroll down and it gives you the little cards, that's an experience people expect because it looks like social media. The same as AMP results, which are the Google News results. When you're like scrolling through on your phone and you can flip through the news stories, that sideways scroll motion is something that users are now used to. So if you want that to be the next action, use the functionality you see in Google and things like that in order to do it. And just ask for feedback as well. Like, there's no harm in putting like, was this helpful? Yes or no? Send feedback onto your pages, because if you do that, you're going to get more information and feedback on what you should be doing on page. And then you want to monitor it, learn it, and repeat it. We're running out of time, so we're just going to fly through these bits. Look at Joe's worried little face. Don't worry, Joe. It's all going to be fine. No one needs to work today. So if you are measuring stuff, we use some metrics called the radioactivity metrics. Again, I'll make sure Joe gets a link to this when he sends the slides round. And we look at things like the number of days from a landing page hitting its peak performance to dropping to half, because that indicates when we want to refresh it. And the same for looking at, we call it a longevity metric, but how long that content is active for before it falls into a line that we call dormant. I think these two are really important for just measuring how content works. Typically with a landing page, like, it accrues equity. So at one point it's gaining points in how it should rank and how it should perform, but simultaneously Google likes new, fresh content that's interesting and updated. So it's fighting against that. So we typically recommend that you're planning in those content refreshes and how you add in content to landing pages, tweak what you have there. So it's really important that you look at when you do that. Otherwise, you might just start tweaking it every month and wasting your time, because you could tweak it once a year, versus you might leave it a year when you actually need to tweak it every month. And then monitor competitor change. This is a paid for tool, but I think is worth its weight in gold, and no way affiliated with me. I'm just their cheapest marketing source. So Content King, where if you put a URL in it or a domain, it alerts you if people have changed stuff. So you can put competitor sites in here. And if you put a competitor site in here, it will ping you when they've changed their page title, they've added content onto it, changed their internal linking, just lets you know what other people have done. So you know when you might want to refresh yours and monitor yours. And you'll also know when you start to see drops. If you see a ranking drop, but you didn't change anything on your site, it can alert you what people changed on theirs. Cool. That was quick, wasn't it? Okay, we're going to look at some of your sites now, and I've just pulled out a couple that I wanted to kind of run through for particular reasons. So the first one I wanted to talk you through is Cambridge Bike Party. Oh, magic. Did that work instantly for everyone to see the website? Yes. Great. We did not know that was going to technically work. So what I wanted to talk about for this landing page is about remembering that we're assessing for SEO as well as user suitability. And I just thought I'd take you through my step-by-step as I start looking at it. So interestingly, I look at this and I'm like, this is a nice user experience. Like, it's well-designed, super, super clear. It instantly feels like you're part of that party experience because you've got all the lights. Great. But then when I start breaking it down into what is it that the owner of this site wants, I'm not quite sure what the owner of the site wants me to do, because I can view a latest playlist, but I can't click on this. I can check out an event calendar, but I can't click on this, or I can send an email. Now, I think it's interesting because I personally think this is probably COVID related, that there isn't a clear CTA of an upcoming event here, and that this is a temporary thing. But the owner could probably win out by just making sure these link, where we're saying go to here, take this next action, by giving them a clear kind of what place to click. And then as you start to scroll down, it's all about what the user wants. So how does a user find this page? What I would say is the page ranks for like 5 different keywords at the moment, but all of them quite low. And that's because they're working in a space where actually bike parties like aren't a thing to the average. They are an experience. So they're a one-off. If someone knows that they want to do a bike party, they're definitely going to come to this site. But if someone doesn't know and they just have an event where they're thinking of doing something, then that's what they need. So as we scroll down, you're going to start seeing that actually it doesn't really optimize in terms of like what could the user have searched to get here. And it provides loads of useful information in terms of how it works. So that's really great for the user, but again, not great for SEO. And then the other thing to note is that there's no structured data in terms of like schema on the site around the events, but potentially because the events aren't live yet at the moment because COVID. But also there's no H1s. So there's no heading that's marked up in terms of like come to this page because it's about this. And I think it's such a cool product. So I wanted to show you just a couple of like what I would call the opportunities here. So these are the keywords that page already ranks for. I think interestingly, Halloween parties, Cambridge, like if it was that you were working over October and able to, then that could be a good area to optimize. But party ideas in general or something like this, actually quite generic, you're already getting a bit of visibility because the site has some links, it has some authority. So providing extra landing pages for those terms could be a really good shout. Also, I thought, because then I looked at what's in the SERP, and looking what's in the SERP, any form of party ideas or inspiration of things to do is always these really long lists. So in terms of those really long lists, what you need to think about is actually, are you the right site? So would it, rather than spending like 6 months doing SEO for Cambridge party ideas, could you just send an email to Last Night of Freedom and tell Hindus that they're going to really want to be doing this and that actually this is a really fun activity and start to kind of rank in there? So it gives you kind of lots of opportunities here as to who you might collaborate with rather than build your own SEO. In terms of the question about event sites during COVID, really interesting one. The reason that I think it's a really good time is because SEO in this space is super competitive and it can take like 3 to 6 months to have any impact. So it's worth starting now on generic terms because it will be easier to rank for event and time specific stuff down the line. So if you focus on kind of generics now, you're more likely to be ready at the point at which like the market picks up again, hopefully. We work for a couple of theater ticket companies and that's kind of what we've been going with the approach-ish, but it's sketchy, isn't it? Then I want to talk about this site called Brand Recruitment. And so Brand Recruitment, firstly, love this bit that like changes and I think works out where you are as it starts to light up because it's all that just happens to be the area that I'm in. But either way, what is it that you want when you come to this site? Well, probably to find a job, but it's a little bit difficult because you've got these boxes here, but they're actually in white when traditionally the biggest like call to action would be in the brightest color or clearest and stand out. So this is super, super interesting that it's almost done in an inverse way here as to where you'll be browsing to find that job. In terms of like what you want as the brand owner for people to do, it's not super clear where you want them to go because you're giving them this blog, this video and a jobs list. And that might be a bit confusing for the user, but what it's really good for is SEO. This site is super, super well optimized for everything higher up the funnel. So jobs are super competitive to search for, right? Especially because Google has Google for Jobs listed in the search results now. So actually, when Google for Jobs was launched, we worked for one of the biggest recruitment companies in the UK, and we lost 85% of our organic traffic to normal search results was then coming through Google for Jobs instead, which is that nice little box that appears and lists the jobs. So the organic opportunity for these pages, like marketing grad jobs, account manager jobs, is probably pretty poor unless you're using structured data and all of that. The organic opportunity sits in this blog section and the guides, CV tips, the salary survey. So they've really focused on that. And having a link from a homepage through means it's going to rank higher. It makes perfect sense, but doesn't make super sense from a user perspective. So a user probably doesn't know where to click. So I would move this copy down and just put a big find a job button here. And that kind of makes it a little bit simpler for them if they do land on this page, even though typically this page isn't a big page for entrances looking at it. Or let them self-select, let them have a box that says, are you looking for a job? Are you looking to hire? And lets them choose which journey to go on to see the relevant information. The other thing just to note would be in terms of H1s, this is the H1 of the page. We've got marketing covered, which sounds a little bit like you do marketing. So they rank for some marketing agency terms rather than marketing recruitment agency terms. So putting something relevant to recruitment up in this top space would be really helpful. Now, if you were like, but that's our slogan, we want it, my tip would be you can still leave that there and have it big and have it in the special color, but then you can mark up something over here as your H1. It doesn't have to be visibly the same. So it's important just to make sure you're including the right keywords within it there. Cool. And then jumping into this one, this actually, rather than click through, I will just show you quickly, is a landing page for if you're in holiday lettings and if you're looking to let your property. And if you're looking to let your property, you land on this. Perfect. The only problem being that it's keyword optimized for holiday lettings. And if it's optimized for holiday lettings, how do I know that's not someone trying to rent a property rather than me trying to rent my property? So it's really important to make sure you're nailing the right keywords there as you go. It's super focused on sign up and conversion at the top here. So they obviously want you to come in, sign up, done. It's good for that. But what's really good is actually the rest of the page that's almost unexpected. Because when you scroll down, there's some really great information here in terms of like how it works, useful information for the user, useful kind of trust signals, and then some related kind of content, a download, more trust signals, which is super important in this space, and then links to tips and advice. That's loads of content that the user doesn't see when they're up here to convert. Now, it feels like the page has been designed to do those two separate things, which is cool, but it needs to just integrate a bit more. So if I get to here, say, it would be really great to still have a button that's floated with me that helps me to convert at the top. Once I'm considering, I then can't go back to that inquiry button unless I scroll up. That's a bit annoying for me as a user because I've had to go down to get the trust signals and then I've gone, oh, where's my conversion point? The same as when I'm up here, if I don't know the brand, I probably wouldn't convert. So I probably need to know that there's more content below here that's going to help me. And giving some indication of that, like changing this incentive to be more about why work with cottages.com, rather than just the financial incentive, and then including this messaging within the form could really help us to understand kind of best of both. It will also help the site rank because basically this stuff isn't keyword optimized, and the higher the content is up on the page, the more likely it's going to rank. So that's super important, which is actually the same problem that this site, your Drinkbox, has. So this content at the top isn't crawlable. And because it's not crawlable and it's just an image, it actually can't, it's not super easy for Google to understand what this page is about. So this site's super interesting because the homepage kind of does nothing for it, but all of the individual product pages are really well optimized. In terms of this homepage, I think just to note, I would really not recommend having this URL at the top here. Because even though it's not clickable to take you through to that website, someone might go type this in. You're going to lose the traffic. And then in terms of down here, having the products that are really expensive first would be my idea. You're probably not making margins on these badges. So lead with some of the alcohol products, especially because this is non-alcoholic at the top. I realize it's early in the morning for booze chat, but you probably, like, if you landed here, you might not understand that the site is then going to sell the alcohol. There's no heading on this page. There's no like optimized page title apart from your drink box. So if someone doesn't know what a drink box is, they're not going to really know this site. So instead, maybe optimizing it for more gift keywords would be really helpful. Just because if you think about it, that's probably what people are buying. The box offering this site does is really cool, where you like build all your products together. And I know it's a gift that like my friends would love, but it doesn't become obvious that that's a gift because you've got this gifts tab here as well, and they're separate. So I think the owner of the site probably just needs to determine what they want to buy. Do we want people to have the box experience or individual products, and then funnel people to that next action all the way through so that they really understand what they're getting from it? And that is super everything. There's a couple of freebies here, which are just some white papers. You can go to our website and download. There's a guide about incrementality, which is a made up word, but it's all about measurement, that talks you through some practical ways to measure things. And then there's this one, which is all about how to use different channels and all of the data, piece it all together in order to have a really cool growth strategy. And that's everything. Thank you.
Lovely, lovely. Thank you so much, Hannah. Like, I mean, you've been able to see the comments come in throughout the course of the session. So you've been able to see that people have just been so grateful for you sharing as you have. And the practicality of it as well is actually something I really appreciate, because I think a lot of people speak about these things, but very few people actually say how to do it. And actually what you've done there is amazing. So thank you so much. We've got time for maybe two or three questions, but in the meantime, I just want you to digest those chat messages coming in, Hannah, because there's a whole lot of love coming your way. So if we take the top four questions and sort of go off those, we'll do that. So the first one's from Andrew, who says, landing page testing. What best way to A/B test if traffic volumes are relatively small, i.e. a niche product versus a small market?
That's honestly a nightmare. So yes, you can set it up in Google Optimize, where you can basically, if you don't know, it puts a layer on top of your site, and then that layer displays differently to what some users see, and you can see which one works better. It takes ages to get the information on that niche page and get it to statistical significance. So one of the things that we do is we put them into a site like usertesting.com. And we build the two pages, we put them both in, and we ask for really detailed feedback, and we'll test on a group of like 50 people. So it's not as much data as we need, but because we get that really like granular feedback and that site records them using it, we get more information than you do from just GA, and we use that to make the decision.
Perfect. So we've got a question here from Sarah, who says, do you believe SEO can be conquered without an agency? And how do you explain the long game of SEO in a simplified way to senior leaders for sign up on costs?
Cool. Okay, I'm not going to go through the 200 participants to identify numbers here. SEO can be done without an agency, to be honest. I think SEO is something that is definitely a skill, but it's also a common sense thing. So certain people just have a knack for it. And if you have the right person working on it in-house, then you don't need that agency support, because you can kind of motivate the troops to do all the things. In terms of selling it into stakeholders, I think the best thing you can do is start showing visibility of your site versus competitor sites. So a site like SEMrush or Systrix give you those nice visibility charts. Start showing you versus competitors, so they understand that actually search is all about like landscape. It's about what percentage of that page you own. And based on that, it's a competitive space. If you go up a position, a competitor goes down. Start showing them visually rather than showing them stats and numbers and stuff. And when they start to visually see that if someone searches for a marketing meetup and they see five different ones that aren't theirs, they're going to be frustrated and start to do it like that. I was saying to Joe earlier, I really like winning. Like, that's my thing. So I'm motivated by like a success thing. So based on that, I love SEO because every single thing is relative in movement. To be good at it, you have to be better than the other sites. So that's probably how I'd sell it in.
Lovely. I love that. There's a question here from Sarah, who says, how important is your domain authority to your overall SEO performance?
Okay, so domain authority is actually a made-up metric. So because it's a metric that Moz created, and Moz decide how it's calculated. So about a year ago, they actually changed how it was calculated. And in terms of changing how it was calculated, everyone's DA just shifted like down 2 points or something. So it's actually a really rubbish metric in terms of, does it actually mean anything? But it's a good comparative metric for tracking site health. So if you have a low DA, don't panic because your site can still rank, okay? But if you have a high DA, also don't just rest on your laurels and be like, I don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. DA in its simplest form is just how many good quality links you have into your site. So looking at things like citation flow and trust flow are going to be really, really helpful as well. In terms of how important links are, which is effectively how important is DA, it depends on your space and it depends on what competitors are doing. So I normally, when I work in a new space, take all of the competitors that I see ranking all the time, make a table where I go, what's their technical health? Can I crawl their site? How many pages do they have? What's their keyword frequency of occurrence? And then also, how many links do they have? How fast is their site? If you are massively different from the norm, you need to do link stuff. If you are not massively different from the norm, keep it as it is and don't sweat it. And it's the other stuff that's the important bit.
I love it. I think everyone can hopefully see at this point, like what I meant at the beginning, when there's like that feeling that you're an expert on something we don't even know about yet. And so, like, I love that. So the one last question, which was actually based on the chat that was coming in when you were presenting, which was about schemas, because I think it's actually something that a lot of folks are unfamiliar with. So would you be able to just sort of go through on a very sort of high level what it is, how important it is, and what you can do about it? So the advice that you gave at the time was to go to schema.org and see what schemas exist. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the type of thing which, unless you know, you don't know. And then on a personal level, it's something I've been trying to implement, but probably had quite a hard time with because I don't really code all that well. So would you be able to speak through that briefly?
Yeah, of course. So schema itself, the way that I always explain it is, you know, when you were at school and you were writing and you were told to signpost your paragraphs, so you were always told, like, start your first paragraph with firstly, then be like, furthermore, secondly. That's what schema is. You're signposting your content to Google to understand it. So Google has millions of pages to process, or billions of pages to process, and it needs to understand, like, what content's on each. So it created schema, or people created schema, as a way of saying to Google, basically putting it in table format, so that Google can look and say, okay, all of this content is the same and this is equivalent to this, and map it all together. So it's schema is a type of structured data being the way we group and target and label it. So the reason I say go to schema.org is because schema.org has a list of all the potential labels, which is cool and really useful, but it's also in really developer-y language. So the other thing you can do is, if you do a search and you see a particular, like, rich result appearing, and if that rich result appears, go onto that page and then right click and press view source, and then Command F or Control F, whatever your preference is, and find, do a find for the word schema, because the code always has the word schema in it, right? And see what they're using. It will say type, it will say at type, app type organization or app type job posting and look at those types and start seeing what those types that are appearing are. And as you start to see those types appear on lots and lots of sites, then go and research how to apply that. You can put it directly into the code on your site. If you're on WordPress, there are lots of plugins that do it for you, which means you don't have to do any coding, which is really the dream. You can also put it directly in through Google Tag Manager as well, which will just embed into the head of your site. So that's a really quick way of doing it. So if you go into the HTML of a page, if it's got schema, you'll be able to see what they've done. So you can reverse engineer. Google also has some really free tools to check it. So it has the Structured Data Markup Helper, which, wordy, if you put a URL into it, you can highlight bits of that page and be like, that's my title, that's my product review, and it builds the code for you because that's how desperate they are for people to use it. If you want to check if it works, you can go to the Rich Snippet Testing Tool, which is the one I showed you earlier that showed that we're eligible. There's also the Structured Data Testing Tool, which Google says it's retiring, but it still works at the moment. And if you put in any URL into it, it tells you if there's a problem in your schema as well. So super, super useful to use any of Google's free tools. But it's definitely one of those ones where the amount of schema there is pretty much limitless. So just spend as much time as possible researching specific to your niche.
That's perfect. Thank you, Hannah. I think it was one of these things that I heard a little bit about the other day, and then it felt like a real rabbit hole, and then spent probably more time than I should have done learning about it and stuff like that. So hopefully we've just opened up that rabbit hole for a few people, but you've got a real sort of great structure there on how to investigate it too. So we're going to wrap things up there. So I just want to say thank you so much, Hannah, for taking the time. Like, amazing, practical, useful. I think there's a whole bunch of folks who are going to be spending the rest of the day completely inspired on how to optimize their landing pages. I want to say thank you to everyone for being here. As ever, like, you know, of course there's a vanity thing to sort of see so many folks in a session like this, but ultimately it's a wonderful feeling to sort of know that there's a bunch of people that have gone away with something really, really useful from someone absolutely wonderful. And you know, it's just the best life. So thank you all so much for being here. My one ask, as ever, please do take the time to thank the sponsors. It really does make a difference. I'll include all the resources that Hannah sends through in the follow-up email, and in there will be the sponsors, so there's your opportunity. And we've got our final webinar of season two being announced, or the final webinar of season two next Tuesday, after which point we will announce, I think, what will be season 2.5, which will probably, for those people who have been doing the joining the every single day webinar camp down in the chat there, then I think we're probably going to do a week of sessions and sort of cap off the year in that way rather than Tuesday sessions. Hannah, I hope you're taking the time to digest these comments because there's some really lovely ones coming in there as well. So hope to see you all very soon. Have a lovely, lovely day, and thank you all. Nice one. Thanks.